Hi, I'm Emerson.
And I'm Turlove. Welcome to Red Square. Every other week, we find people making their way across, you guessed it, Red Square, and ask them some deep questions.
We think that stranger stories matter, and by hearing them, we can all come away with a little more awareness of the complexities of being human.
I think of flowers. I also think of the flowers around UW. So like right outside of Savory Hall and in between Kane Hall in the late spring and during the summer, it smells so good there. I had to look it up. There, you know those little white flowers that grow there? I think they're called Madagascar jasmine. And so I think they're related to like jasmine in general. So like it makes me think of like Sampaguita, the smell, which is like the national flower of the Philippines because like I'm Filipino. So like I always really like passing through there. It reminds me of childhood and makes me think of home and stuff.
We tend to define growth as the crossing off of checklist items in our lives, graduating high school, going to college, starting a career. But there are so many different and yet equally important ways to make progress on yourself as a human being.
Our guests today have each marked their growth in their own ways, both in personal development and concrete achievements. Here is Shyla.
I didn't come from wealth. I didn't come from suburban privilege. I didn't come from the middle class. I was poor. Like I experienced the recession in 2008 with my mother and I. We only had an apartment with no furniture, and we had to eat out of a big 8-pound bag of jasmine rice, and we homemade our bread. And we would, if we could get enough change together after the rent and all the bills were paid, we could go get eggs. That was about it. I stole a summer sausage from a supermarket just to have a change of pace. But we managed to make it through the recession, and then I was just like, I don't want to be like this anymore. I want to go do something. I want to get out of this rut that I'm in. And so I got out, and I did it. And it's amazing what happens when you can kind of turn the tides. It was funny. I saw a tweet yesterday from somebody asking, it's, you know, almost 1 month to the end of the decade. What have you done in this decade? And I started reading stories from other people, and I started thinking about my own growth experience over the decade, and I did a lot of things that I didn't think I could do in one decade. In 2010, I was getting prepared to join the Navy, and I joined the Navy in 2011. I successfully went through 4.5 years in the Navy. I was an aviation machinist mate, so I worked on Super Hornet jet engines and at the operational level. And then I got to move and live in Japan and travel all over Southeast Asia. There were times when I couldn't handle being in the military. I was also a victim of sexual assault, and I wasn't dealing with that. And as a result, I tried to kill myself while I was in the military. But it's okay. It's okay. That's the part of the growth process for me, is just learning how to handle the emotions of the experiences that I have.
Yeah.
And I was able to bounce back as best I could. I got out of the military, came to the state that I've always wanted to live in. I grew up in the deep South. So, yeah. I have been basically succeeding in my dream. I went to Paris while I was here at UW to study critical theory, and I got to travel to Venice and Dublin, and I got to do all of these things, and these were all self-motivated. I get to be in oceanography. I'm going to be graduating here in spring of 2020, and it's like all these personal challenges that I've met and I've succeeded in, even if I thought at the time I wasn't going to, it was just kind of worth it to just give it a try. Because like, yes, you can sit there and say, well, it's kind of difficult and I don't think I'm going to succeed in it. And you can say that, but just give it a try. You know, when I first started in college, I'd wanted to be an oceanographer my whole life, but progressively, because I wasn't good at science and math initially, I told myself, well, I'm not a math person, so therefore I probably shouldn't go into science. I shouldn't go into oceanography because those are things that are math and science related. And so I decided to go off on the path of doing psychology because that was something that was easy, that I didn't have to really work hard to do and understand and to work with. And I was actually planning on coming here to UW for psychology. And then I just thought to myself, I'm just like, why am I doing this? I don't actually want to do this. I've been wanting to do this other thing my whole life. Like, what's, you know? So that's when I kind of made the decision of just it a try. Yeah. Just, you know, and I failed my way through it. And it was embarrassing. I had severe imposter syndrome. I was depressed. All of the things, you know. And I'm sure that every student here has experienced imposter syndrome. Some are just a lot better at hiding it, you know. Yeah. So, but I managed to make it to the other side. And now I'm doing, like, a supremely better.
It sounds like, in that sense, like you were growing into yourself.
Yeah. Well, and just the potential. And that's, yeah. Well, and learning that, it makes me want to think about how I can help other people with their mm-hmm. potential. I always told myself that I just wasn't a math person. I was very much in that fixed mentality. Mm-hmm. And when I finally learned about the growth mentality, I decided to go and tutor other math students who were of varying ages in math, just to kind of help them, because it helped me. And it was just this really healing experience, wow. of being able to connect with other people who were struggling just like I was. It was, I don't know. It was a great feeling, so, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, so I guess, like, during these times that you've been, like, overcoming all these challenges and, like, learning about yourself, like, mm-hmm. yeah, what are, like, some of the big things that you've learned?
Okay, so I didn't know 10 years ago that I had ADHD. And I realized that it was a little too late for such a long time. I was beating against myself for not being, I didn't think I was smart enough. I didn't think I was capable enough, because it's like your brain is constantly sabotaging you when you're on when you have ADHD, right? So you tell yourself to remember things, but then you just forget them completely. You know, you don't have a good short-term memory. So when I found out that I had it later on, because I'm 32, when I was diagnosed, I was like, this all makes sense, and it all started coming together. And as a result, I feel like I've grown as a person just from being able to know that that was a thing. So one thing with ADHD that I've learned, and I've also realized about myself, because I used to have crazy emotional overreactions, is that you don't have the kind of cap on self-soothing like neurotypical people do, right? Most neurotypical people are really good at self-soothing and kind of calming themselves down and not having the overreaction. But with ADHD, you don't have that. So it's just, when you feel it, you react immediately. If you don't learn to build like a little kind of graduated reaction to it, then it's going to explode. And we're raised in this kind of attitude of our emotions are just things that we need to ignore because they don't serve us at all. And that's not true either. Emotions, you know, and I feel like the idea of the rational mind, and rational mind is good, but can also be cruel. Yeah. If you don't have a balance with emotions, then you have to have a certain emotional intelligence too.
Yeah, like we have emotions for a reason.
Yeah.
They tell us things.
They're part of our evolutionary progress, you know, like they're still there. They haven't been eliminated, so they must be serving a purpose. And it's time to understand how you're feeling in a moment and give yourself, tell yourself that time to kind of process that. But that's another thing too, knowing how you're feeling, taking that into consideration, because it is such a crucial and important and wonderful part of your life that I feel like so many people are missing out on. So
yeah.
But for me, as far as growth as a human being, I'm learning so much about other people. Like, it's insane. And for a long time, it was very like me-centric kind of world of like, what, how do I feel about this? Or how do I, you know, want to go about doing this, or that person's opinion is wrong because I think this, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually, over this past decade, it's been a lot of me starting to be like, well, what does that other person think? Maybe they have an interesting and new perspective that I wasn't looking at. And I really do think that that is one of the best definitions of growth, personal growth, yeah. right? Because when you start looking outside of yourself and being objective about yourself, not beating yourself up, but also not sitting there and propping yourself up to be the most intellectual or the best or whatever, when you start seeing yourself as just another kind of point in human connectivity, it's comforting.
Hey, welcome back. Our final guest today is Jackson, a fearless leader who combated complaining children, torrential rain, and hungry raccoons. He shared with us the story of his adventure.
This past summer, I worked some of the summer just as a standard camp counselor in cabins and stuff like that. And the other portion of the summer, I was guiding kayaking and backpacking trips with high schoolers. I've done a decent amount of backpacking. Sea kayaking is a little more new to me. If you're working with a group of people who's much less experienced with and is depending on you to be confident in your own abilities and lead them, essentially, it puts you in some odd situations. One thing that happened was that This was a 5-day long kayaking trip around the Key Peninsula. We started at Fair Harbor and we kayaked around the whole Key Peninsula, stopping at various points along the way, and came back to camp. We spent our second night at Joemma Beach State Park, and when we woke up, it was pouring rain. We looked at the forecast and it was going to be pouring rain for the next day and a half. We looked at the equipment we had. One boy had forgotten his raincoat. We check everyone's gear before we go, but apparently the raincoat hadn't made it on the bus to where we started. And some people had cotton clothing as their insulation, and we just decided it would be a better idea to take a rest day at Joemma Beach, spend an extra night there, and then we would make our last day longer. We would do twice the mileage that we would have otherwise. So we stayed an extra day. It was fun. We spent a lot of time under the shelter playing cards, hanging out, playing ukulele. But that night, my tent specifically had been totally flooded after a day of torrential rains. I set up my hammock between the posts of a picnic shelter. My head was probably 15 feet away from our pile of dry bags, which have all of our food, all of our stoves, all of our cooking gear. And I went to sleep, and I slept wonderfully. In the morning, I woke up, I put my hammock away, and I saw half of a slice of bread on the ground. And I didn't think of it. I thought one of our kids has left some bread on the ground. And as we were trying to make breakfast, we were looking around for our food, and we should have had 4 dry bags. And some of them were missing. We had 2 that were entirely full, 2 that were half full, and the 2 that were fully filled with food were just gone. One of the dry bags that hadn't been stolen had holes in it from teeth marks. There was raccoon fur in the bread bag that they left behind. Raccoons stole our food. Also, we'd seen a family of a mother and 4 baby raccoons. They took all of our s'more supplies, unfortunately, including 12 bars of chocolate, which is not good for raccoons. So those raccoons are dead. They stole our food and they paid the price for it. We started doing the math. We had 12 people. We had this much food. I was looking at all the nutrition facts and figuring out how many calories we have. And long story short, we still had another day of paddling and then all the way back to camp that third day. We did not have enough food for all of that. And so Maddie, my trip co-leader, and I talked with each other for a bit, and then we talked with the rest of the group, and we asked them what they wanted to do. They said, we can do one of a couple things. We can give camp a ring, we got a phone, we can call them, we can get some extra food, we can just continue with our planned itinerary. Or, as an alternative, we can go light on lunch today. We can make dinner, we still have enough for one more dinner tonight. Wake up and eat everything that we have left over. We called it mystery sandwiches because we had like a little bit of peanut butter, we had some breads, we had some leftover pita, we had a can of tomato sauce, cheese, just really whatever is going to fit on a slice of bread that we can eat. And then we would get up at 4 in the morning that morning, paddle 16 miles, and try to make it back to camp by lunch. And at the beginning of the week, it took this group 6 hours to go 4 miles. And now we're planning a 16-mile last day on almost no food after getting up at 4 in the morning. We put it to a blind vote. We had everyone close their eyes and decide what they wanted to do. And unanimously, they all decided that they wanted to choose the latter option. So we paddled the rest of the day. We had an early dinner. We went to bed very early. We woke up the next morning to go. And I woke up before everyone else. And I brought my trumpet along with me. But I woke up on the side of Anderson Island, which is a beautiful, beautiful place. And we were camping on the beach, so during the night, the water comes up almost up to our tents. If you wake up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom, and you don't watch where you're going, it's about a yard from your tent if it's the right time. But the fog had rolled in, and I couldn't see the other side of the water, probably a mile away. I could barely even see the other side of the cove, which was a quarter of that distance. So as I'm looking off, it's before the sun has risen. The fog blends into the water. It's just gray as far as you can see, and it just disappears into nothingness. And I pulled out my trumpet, and I woke the kids up with the Star Wars theme song, and I can hear my trumpet echoing off the land on the other side of the water a mile away. And they all woke up, still in the dark, in the fog, and we got ready by headlamps, and we paddled off into the water, without being able to see where we were going. It was a magical, ethereal moment. Maddie and I had done this route before, so we knew where we were going, but there's a point in that distance where we have to cross between Anderson Island and McNeil Island, and at that point we have to leave the shore behind. We'd been following the shore where we could see it, and we just head straight into nothingness. So as the shore is disappearing behind us into the fog, we reach a point where we can see just the tiniest shadow of the sun overhead as it's coming through the clouds. But all around us, there's nothing but fog. And so I pointed out, the sun's rising over here, it's rising in the east, we're heading approximately northeast. We're just gonna keep the sun about 20, 30 degrees to our right, and we're just gonna go. And so I led a group of high school age kids into a fog-filled nothingness. And as the sun continued to rise and the fog burned off, we could see the most beautiful day. In a couple hours, there's not a cloud in the sky. And we still made it back to camp by lunch, and everyone was absolutely ravenous. That was the best pizza I've ever eaten in my life. But I was so proud of those kids for doing what they had not thought was possible. At the beginning of the week, the complaining that I had heard out of them for how sore they were and how some of them had blisters on their hands, and waking up that second morning and they're all complaining on how bad they feel, and you have to get them excited to get them into the boats again, to being so proud of themselves all after that, just a week of learning is a really fantastic experience to be able to facilitate. And it's stuff like that that I'm most proud of from my time at camp, being able to help other people have that experience. It was magical. That's the best word I can use to describe
it. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us today on Red Square. If you have a story of your own that you want to share, email us at uwredsquare@gmail.com or just find us on Red Square in real life.
We hope you enjoyed listening.